As we start a new year, welcome to our Ag Perspectives podcast series and today's podcast with Aaron Boyer, economist for the U.S. Meat Export Federation. A lot of good things happening as we start the new year regarding beef exports, and we talk about all of that with Aaron, including the Japanese agreement, the EU agreement, prospects of the Phase 1 trade deal with China being signed, and also what's happening in South Korea. All that coming today with our conversation with Aaron Boyer. Aaron, let's talk about a couple of these things that are going on. You know, brand new year. We've got some deals that are in effect as of January 1. And obviously out there seems to be maybe a better deal with China ahead. But top of the list has to be this deal with the U.S.-Japanese partial agreement that the president and the Japanese have agreed to that puts us on level footing with the other players in the TPP. How important is this for U.S. Beef producers?
Yes, this is critical and super exciting way to start 2020. We are looking at revisions to our forecasts right now and moving them further to the upside. So there's clearly a lot going on right now and trying to sort out how everything impacts is a bit mind-blowing. But for starters, yeah, you're taking that tariff into Japan, our number one market, which we can't forget about, from 38.5% to 26.6% effective now. And that is the same as the competition. And just for perspective, Japan's imports of Canadian beef last year increased by about 85%. So Canada had that lower tariff rate effective last year, 2019, through the CPTPP. So granted, we won't have a tariff advantage versus the competition. We'll be on a level playing field. But it shows you how important these tariff rates are and that impact on trade. So we do expect a double-digit increase in U.S. beef exports to Japan. And the other factor you have going on here is on the supply side, where Australia is in this, you know, horrible continuing drought. You've seen the wildfire coverage on national news, and it's just devastating. Really hope that turns around. But the fact is that not only in the short run, but probably in the longer term, you're going to see those tighter supplies out of Australia. And the Japanese buyers know that. They've already pulled off on purchases out of Australia, partially because you also have Australia shifting to China. So a lot going on, but on the supply side dynamics, I see pretty tight global beef supplies, partially with that China factor pulling more products from all of our competitors. Australia production basically having to slow down at some point because the drought liquidation mode has been so intense for so long now, even though we don't see a break in the drought, unfortunately, for them on the horizon. And then the other thing, you know, in the Japanese market, it also gets very interesting because these tariff reductions should allow us to do more business in, like, higher value, higher price cuts, because when you think about an ad valorem tariff, 38.5% tax, you know, that is a lot of money, right? If you're talking especially a higher price cut. So with that reduction, we should start to see some changes in the product mix. And the other interesting factor here is that you could see some major changes. Australia is the dominant supplier of trimmings to Japan. They also export a lot of trimmings to the U.S. market for hamburger production. But again, if you see these Australian supplies tightening up, then does that open, you know, new opportunities even on some of the more value cuts? So again, super interesting dynamics, but we're looking at easily a double-digit increase in U.S. beef exports to Japan, that top market. We're looking in the range of increases of 13% to 16% here in 2020.
I know, of course, USMEF, of course, has had good relationships with those key players within Japan, and getting us back on that level playing field, I know, is really important to helping pull this higher level of beef sales through, right?
Yes, definitely. And we will be, you know, working heavily in the Japanese market to regain market share. Luckily, our share We didn't slip terribly in beef, which is testament to many things, but it also shows how much the Japanese customers and consumers prefer U.S. product. But still regaining and growing our share in that market and really growing Japanese beef consumption, which there is still a lot of room to grow, especially if we look at neighbors like South Korea. So we'll be intensifying those customer communications in Japan, and we're meeting with our staff here in a couple of weeks to really hammer through those plans. But yes, our boots on the ground will be doubling down to make sure that we can maximize the tariff advantages or level playing field, because, you know, that in itself clearly doesn't sell the product. So U.S. exporters will be doing everything they can, and USMEF with our industry partners will be there on the campaign side trying to help, you know, move the volumes. And again, if we're looking at some changes in how this trade works and different products traded, that's going to take a lot of work in Japan on our behalf.
One other agreement that is in place right now is this new tariff rate quota guarantee for U.S. beef into the European Union. I know, you know, we're talking about never ever beef, so it's not the whole universe of our U.S. beef supply, but the reliability of having this quota, I know, is huge.
Yes, absolutely. It is a very important market, as you suggested. It is a niche market, but critical, high value, lots of growth potential now with this agreement, and certainly for our niche and NHTC beef producers. And so, yes, we're looking at a U.S. specific share of this quota. It starts at 18,500 tons this calendar year, and it grows to 35,000 tons over the 7 years. And so that is out of a total of 45,000 tons, which had been increasingly dominated by our competitors. We were squeezed down to, you know, close to 20% market share, and it was not a sustainable agreement. And so fortunately, USTR, European Commission, did reach agreement to give us a U.S. share. And this U.S. specific share essentially allows us to grow by about 25% here in year one, and another 25% next year, because it jumps to 23,000 tons in 2021. So really exciting for U.S. beef producers and for our customers in Europe who have been just chomping at the bit to do more with U.S. beef. But it was not really possible when you have to clear product in the first couple of weeks of each quarter, because this quota operates quarterly, and it was getting fully used within the first couple of weeks of each quarter. And so you're trying to manage chilled high value products in that European market, whether you're a chef or a retailer, you need that consistent supply. And you can imagine on this side, trying to produce NHTC, so program cattle, from the feedlot all the way through the plant, making sure that ship lands in Rotterdam within the first couple of really days of each quarter, it's just kind of a nightmare. So now you have some continuity, business continuity, and our staff on the ground in Europe will be able to plow into new markets where we just basically hadn't touched because we couldn't really grow. So, yeah, super exciting.
Finally, you know, the thing out there that's going to be huge, obviously, I guess we're still kind of waiting for some details, but the phase one deal with China, there's been suggestions that we will maybe see some relief from the extra phytosanitary type extra requirements that the Chinese had put on our beef when we first made the agreement, what a year and a half ago or thereabouts?
Right. Yep. You hit it. China is the big one that's still out there that we're anxiously awaiting those details. And so hopefully, as President Trump tweeted, the signing on the 15th, we'll see. But yes, on the edge of our chairs. And as you allude to, and even as Ambassador Lighthizer has said, or alluded anyway, that the other barriers besides just tariffs are supposedly addressed in this agreement. And there is, yes, a long list of those barriers facing our U.S. beef. I would note that China imposes these barriers on all of its suppliers, and our production system, we're not really set up to produce versus South America, where they don't use growth promotants anyway, and they have traceability requirements because of FMD. So it's kind of China's better positioned, or their production is already mostly China eligible, put it that way. Mm-hmm. Not the case for the U.S. So if we get big changes in the market access conditions, SPS or sanitary, phytosanitary requirements, then yes, it could be mind-boggling. The Chinese market has just been on fire again this year, and imports are massive. They're the biggest importer in the world by far, and those numbers, $7.3 billion worth of beef imported January through November. We will have bought in the U.S. somewhere just over $5 billion worth of beef coming into this country. We used to be the biggest importer in the world, so it's been quite a shift into China, and the U.S. currently, we account for less than 1% of China's imports. So it's only upward potential for us, but again, we're waiting for those details, and including on what the retaliatory tariff situation will look like, because that's also not really been forthcoming. And currently, U.S. beef pays 47% tariff into China. Australia is, this year, they'll be 5%, I think, through their free trade agreement. And so our biggest competitor pays, you know, basically nothing compared to what already very high-priced U.S. beef, because of the production requirements, pays into China.
So that difference in tariff is one of the reasons that a lot of that beef that has been available from Australia has gone that direction instead of maybe going head-to-head with other countries into Japan.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. Very much the case.
So, you know, I know we've started some relationships. We've started building some relationships. The USMEF team has on mainland China. Where are we on that? Have we been able to start, you know, getting some folks really at least interested to talk about including beef, you know, U.S. beef in their mix?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Our China team, we kind of had to do some pep rallies this past year and a half, because it was a bit depressing, not only facing the retaliatory tariffs, but just the massive uncertainty, you know, not knowing what tomorrow might hold. These duty rates for beef have been relatively constant. So we got the 25% retaliation summer of 2018, and then that just increased by another 10% this past September. So they didn't end up varying that much, but still you had that uncertainty of not knowing whether the tariff may increase or go away tomorrow. So that's not healthy when you're buying very expensive product. And so there's been that overlaying, but also kind of the efforts on the Chinese government side to discourage imports from the U.S. And that can be done in a variety of ways, but includes things like reference pricing used at the border. So this was had probably a bigger impact on pork than beef, but where Chinese customs says no, that price is artificially low, it's actually this, and then you pay an even higher tariff. So there's just been a lot of kind of quieter stuff going on to discourage the trade. But even so, China is importing more beef from the U.S. this year, despite all of these challenges, which is testament to the demand for our product. And USMEF, you know, our boots on the ground, they continue to work in the market every day. And just, we really doubled down on supporting the loyal customers of U.S. beef. And that is at both food service or restaurants, as well as the high-end retail shops. And again, doing everything we can to support those loyal customers. And then the exciting part is now trying to think and gear up for this phase one agreement and being ready to hit the ground running and help the exporters understand what the new situation is as soon as those details are revealed.
Right, right. I guess what are some of the relationships we've built on the pork side, does that carry over to the beef side as well in China?
It does somewhat, yes, for sure. I mean, some of those bigger players obviously handle both products, so that is helpful. And a lot of the activity, like trade shows and those types of events, are combined species. So we've been able to remain heavily active in the Chinese market even before U.S. beef regained access. So that has certainly been helpful. USMEF has been active there, you know, despite the more than a decade that U.S. beef was out of the market. We've been there on the pork side, and that has certainly helped and yes, maintaining those customer relationships throughout, because again, a lot of them do handle both pork and beef.
One last question, Aaron, and that has to do with you alluded to maybe our true success story, the shining star when it comes to beef exports. Japan's our biggest dollar value, but it seems like that growth with a bullet is South Korea. What do you think for 2020 for South Korea? Are we going to continue to see some growth?
Yes, South Korea, I've called my model market for a few years now. It's just been fantastic and so exciting for us to watch because it's been, you know, it was a difficult battle back for a while. If you recall, candlelight vigils in the street against U.S. beef, lots of hurdles to come back after BSE overlaid with the free trade agreement and a lot of politicalization of U.S. beef. And so, you know, huge kudos to our team in Korea, led by Ji Hae-ying. They've just worked amazingly. Of course, economic growth and the trends to crave and appreciate protein as a healthy food source have also underpinned a lot of our growth. And then more recently, the convenience trend, which has just been amazing. I mean, you pretty much have to see it to fully fathom, but the home meal replacement products, which unlike what we really think of, they actually do include a lot of protein and even U.S. beef, particularly U.S. pork, but even U.S. beef. And then on the restaurant side, the restaurant sector in Korea has gotten hit somewhat because there's been this change in the working hours and really whole lifestyle change, where instead of working until 8 p.m. and going out to eat with your coworkers, you now go home at 5 or 6 p.m. And that's also underpinned convenience, where I grab something on my way home or I order the delivery or whatever it is. But on the retail side, or on the food service side for beef, we've still excelled. So there's been a development of kind of family style steakhouses, as well as the traditional Korean rib houses. And you see features of choice U.S. beef steak cuts, which we didn't really see in the Korean market just a few years ago, and merchandising some of the chuck items as steak as well, and then priced under, say, a $20 per plate price point, and driving a lot of traffic at lunch and dinner. And the market is just constantly changing. I'm really excited. I'll be there next month, and I'll have a better perspective for you then. Because it's just constantly moving. But of course, the conversion of Costco back to U.S. beef and all of its chilled cases was a huge game changer. And we saw that playing out last year, as well as for much of 2018. And so, yeah, a lot of the big boom has probably already happened. And yet you still see that supply advantage versus Australia, because Australia is also the other dominant supplier into South Korea, just as it is into Japan. So I think we do still have room for upward growth again this year. As long as the economy continues to grow, South Koreans could still eat more beef. But honestly, part of it is probably going to be continued growth in U.S. market share. We already account for over a third of total South Korean beef consumption. So we're headed back to where we were pre-BSE. Our office just got the latest polling results showing another uptick in basically Korean consumer acceptance of U.S. beef. So, yeah, it's still looking very positive and just a super dynamic market.
A super dynamic market indeed. Aaron Boyer, economist for the U.S. Meat Export Federation. That's your Ag Perspectives podcast on the Oklahoma Farm Report. I'm Ron Hayes.